Okay, so the Gemara on the bottom of Chavtes Amud Aleph takes us to the question of the father's obligation in Pidgin HaBen. The Gemara asks, Livdoso, oh yeah, he has to be Podeh, son. Minolan, how do you know such a thing? How do you know that the father has to be Podeh, his son? Dichsiv, because the Pasuk says, Kol b'chor banecha tifteh, that one has to redeem the firstborn of his sons. And if he didn't do it himself, so that if the father didn't do it, then he has to do it himself, because the pasuk says in Bamidbar, so here the Gemara quotes Pados Sivdeh. So there, that shows that that is an obligation that applies not only to Banecha, but also to the boy himself. V'ihi minala and la mifkada. How do you know that the mother does not have such an obligation? D'chsev tifdeh kol shem mitzuva liftos es aksmo mitzuva liftos es acherim. Whoever is obligated on his own, as we just saw, that is the next level, is therefore obligated towards others. Because eina mitzuva liftos es atzmo, eina mitzuva liftos acherim. And if you don't have a chiyuv on yourself, then you don't have a chiyuv towards others. Now this is interesting because, as we mentioned, this could be the working theory for really all the mitzvahs of HaBen. This may not be a unique concept by Pidgin HaBen, but this may be how all of these mitzvahs work. We mentioned in the Eiri that that's essentially the essence of the whole issue here. Okay, but here the Gemara invokes that to say that therefore that's the reason why the mother doesn't have a chiyuv. How do you know that there's no obligation on a b'chora? D'chsev, tifteh, kol sha'acher mitzuvim lifdoso, mitzvah lifdos as atzmos. It seems a little bit circular, but then that goes back onto her to say she doesn't have an obligation on herself. Kol she'ein acher mitzuvim lifdoso, ei mitzuvim lifdos as atzmos. U'minayin she'ein acher mitzuvim lifdoso. Ah, but how do you know that others are not obligated to be poda her? Tamar kra, kol b'chor b'necha, tifteh b'necha, v'lo b'nosecha. Fine. So here we have the Iker obligation. So then the Gemara just adds a few other things, which we'll probably say more about later, but let's look at the Gemaras now. Tana Rabbanan, hu liftos, ubino liftos. Let's say a person has both his self to be poder and his son to be poder. Hu kodem livno. So he should do himself before he does his son. Rabbi Huda omer ubino kodmo, shezem mitzvaso al aviv. V'zav mitzvos b'no olav. So Behuda says the son should come first because this one is the mitzvah on the father too, and this one is the mitzvah of the father on of the son on him. So you have to figure out exactly what that means. Amr of Yirmiya hakolodim. Everyone agrees. Kolhecha deleka elachamei shloim. That we're not just talking about prioritization, but if somebody only has five shloim total, who kodem livno? Then he has to come before his son. So my taima, mitzvah de gufei adifa, because the mitzvah that is on him is preferable. Let's figure out what that means. Ki pligi, the whole machlokas is hecha de ikka chamesh meshubadim, the chamesh bnei chayim. Let's say he has five that is meshubad to somebody else, tied up in land. That is possibly that of a creditor. The chamesh bnei chayim and five that is not under such a obligation. So Yehuda Sava Milva Dichsiv Batora Kiksuva Bishtar Damya, something that comes from the Torah obligation, it's as if it was written in a shtar from beforehand. So Bahani Chamesh Parik Livrei, so that if he uses the five that he has to be posed himself, but also calling the Torah for the Chamesh Meshubadim with the day, then the Kohen can come and take the five that's Meshubad on behalf of his own Chiv. It's not as if it's actually written in a shtar. So therefore he's not going to have that venue for the other five to go on his own behalf, so therefore he should prioritize the mitzvah of himself. What if he only has enough either to be poed to his son or to do a li l'regel? So poed to his b'no, v'acharkech ol l'regel. So his first priority is to pigeon and a son, and then Eliel Ragov, the Omer Eliel Ragov, Echad Kodesh Beno. And Rabbi Yehuda says the other way around, Shazu Mitzvah Overis, because Eliel Ragov is going to miss its opportunity. Vizu Mitzvah She'eino Overis, and this is a mitzvah that is not going to pass. Bishlam Rabbi Yehuda Kidak Amar Taimu. Okay, Rabbi Yehuda gave his reason. Rabbana Mai Taimayu. So what's the reason for Rabbana? Amar Kroa Kol B'chol Menacha Tifta V'Hagli Ro Fani Reikom Tan Rabbana. So that's you see that comes afterwards. Tan Rabbana Minayin Shem Hayu Lo Chamisha Banim Mechamish Nashim Shechay Avlifto Skuan. So how do you know if you have five sons from five wives? Do you have to hold all of them? Tamid Lomar Kol B'chol Menacha Tifta. So pshita, so doesn't that seem pretty straightforward? That should be the case. Peterechem tala rachmana, because we see that if it's did in peterechem, so it's all about the mothers. So malatema, what would you have thought? Nelef b'chor b'chor menachala malah halon reishus. Oh no, afkar reishus. Oh no, and the answer is oh no. Kamashulan. That's not the case, and that it doesn't go by him; it goes by her. So now, let's keep in mind, let's assume that the Gemara is sticking to the policy that we stated, that we're not looking to discuss all of Hilchos Pidgin Habban here, but just those details that are relevant to what emanates from the Mishnah and from our focus. So why does the Gemara pick the details of Pidgin Habban that it just listed here to get involved in? What's the connection, right? What did we just see? So we talked about who is Chayiv and Pidgin Habban, and who isn't Chayiv and Pidgin Habban. And then we talked about how do we prioritize if both the father and the son need Pidgin, and then how do we decide if there's only enough for one. And then the Gemara gets into this question of Eliel Ragav. So why are these halacha, and also the din of if somebody has five different wives? So why does the Gemara discuss these dinim here, as opposed to any other issues within Pidgin Habban? Is this a random sampling of some of the laws of Pidgin Habban?
What are the other contexts of Pidgin Habban?
What other dinim could you talk about?
What are the other spots where Pidgin Habban is talked about? What is talked about there?
Well, it talks about it in Bechorus, for example. You know, questions of sfeikus, if you're not sure you're obligated, so do you have to pay or not? What if you have a father who is a chalal, father who creates a chalal, say he marries a grusha? So there are a lot of other dinim that could come up. Also the dinim of what constitutes a bechor, the dinim of what constitutes a previous birth that would stop the din of Bechor. There's all kinds of other. It happens to not be so much in Shulchan Aruch. It's basically one siman in Shulchan Aruch. It's not the biggest area in Halacha. There's a Pidgin Habban Kehilchos. It's a good sized volume. There's what to talk about. So why do these dinim specifically here? Do they seem to have any particular focus, or are they a random sampling? It seems like what the Gemara is highlighting is trying to figure out to what extent Pidgin Habban as the obligation on the father is the father's obligation to do the son's mitzvah, to which obligation is it a personal obligation, and therefore if the father is himself a bechor, now he's an adult, so how do those two additions, how do those two obligations rank against each other? And by examining that, so the Gemara is focusing specifically on trying to figure out really the whole context of our broader sugya on Koftes of mitzvah sa'ava laben. What exactly do we mean that we say that here the father is to be poda his son? And this is particularly interesting, and perhaps in a way that's not true by bris milah. Bris milah, as an obligation that applies to every male, is about maleness, right? It is about that a male Jew has an obligation of bris milah. So to say there is a chiyuv on the father is presumably only because as an 8-day-old baby, you don't have so much autonomy. And you don't have so much ability to take care of yourself. But it's not something that has to be inherently father-related, although maybe there's more to say about that, and we didn't really explore that so much. But when it comes to Pidgin Habban, right, there is a whole other element here. right? That it's not necessarily about, it's not necessarily about the idea of the boy being who he is, but that there's something specific about his relationship to his parents. Follow what I'm saying? Right, the whole status of somebody who is obligated in Pidgin Haben has an element that's different than the status of somebody who's obligated in Bris Milah. Bris Milah is about who you are. Pidgin Haben is about who you are in relation to your parents.
Yeah.
Right? So if you have previous older siblings, so then there is a concept of then there's no obligation to Pidgin Haben. So the fact that this is something which is defined by his relationship to a parent is itself something interesting. So the Gemara, before finishing off the sugya, highlights the question of which parent defines. And you could have thought that this was an obligation on the father, especially since we're focusing here on mitzvahs ben el ha'av, which it's interesting also, the Gemara doesn't necessarily use that as the basis for the question. The Gemara uses something else as the basis for the question. But you would have thought that if you have a man with five wives, there's only one pidgin haben there, and the fact that it goes by the mother is a chiddush that the Gemara has to point out. So it seems like these dinim are all clustered around this idea specifically of understanding not just the chiyuv of Pidgin Haben for the individual, but how that relates specifically to the relationship of the father to the child. Okay, so that being the case, so let's focus on some of that. Just parenthetically, I want to mention the question just because it's really not so crucial. So just to kind of get it out of the way, it's interesting that this idea that the Gemara asks about somebody who only has five slaim, so what should he do? Should he be poda himself or be poda his son? So that seems to contradict another halachic principle that we have. Anyone know where you could ask a question from? We normally have a rule, as the Gemara in Suvis, that one is only supposed to spend a fifth of his money on staka. And the Rama extrapolates from there that it's not just about staka, but it's also about mitzvos in general. So, therefore, if that's the case, if somebody only has five sloim, so how could he be said that he has to give all of it towards any mitzvah? Not just how should he choose between himself and his son? He shouldn't have to do either. Jacob?
I'm just tied to the idea that it's not really like something you're paying, it's kind of a debt you've incurred by having your son.
Oh, so it might be. It might be. So, you could probably have a couple of approaches to this question. First of all, you get the question, right? Normally, if it costs you more than a fifth of your money to do your mitzvos, so then you are exempt.
He's a person who owns 25 slim.
Say it again?
He's a person who owns 25 slim.
That's your assuming that's not spelled out in the Gemara, but that's really what's going on here. He has 25 slime. So we have cheshbon out, a fifth of the 25. So now we're talking about five. Okay, maybe that's the subtext.
It might be, yeah, I'm sure there'd be more than a bunch of ways to say it, but...
Right,
and probably... It could be very easy to be like, yeah, maybe. 20, plus 5, or something like that.
Yeah, maybe.
It runs into 5 slum to give...
Well, I probably would have mentioned it, but okay, there's 5 left over. I think Jacob's approach maybe takes us a little bit more into the heart of the matter, that maybe it does indicate that this is a chiyuv to somebody else. And one doesn't necessarily have the right to say, for example, if you borrowed money from somebody else and now you need to pay it back and it's more than a fifth of your money, so presumably, it's not obviously the case, but presumably you're a chiyuv to pay back this person. transcends the obligation of sticking to one-fifth. So that point is well taken, and that might be relevant here. So maybe this is a clue that this isn't a normal mitzvah kind of obligation. Another possibility you could say is that what good does it do you to say that you're putter here? That if there is a goal that has to be accomplished, that the boy has to be nifdeh, so then you can say, alright, so you're not able to do it right now, but the mice of the chiyu is going to hang around forever. Right, the same way that if the father has a month-old baby, and he doesn't do the pidyon, so then it's going to come up 13 years later when the boy becomes the bar mitzvah, then he's going to be chayiv. So to say today, well, you don't have enough money, you're pater, what does that mean? You're going to be pater forever? You're not going to be pater in the sense that it's as if the mitzvah is done. Right? Let's say you had a father who was destitute, and for the first 13 years of his son's life, he never had a nickel to do pidyon aveirah. So would you say that the son is pater now that he grows up, because it was as if he was nifdeh? Right, presumably not. Right? This is not a mitzvah in the sense of matzah, let's say, where you could say, if I can't afford the matzah, maybe I should be as if I did it. Here, presumably, there's a goal that has to get done. So we have to figure out, one way or another, even if he has a personal exemption from spending any more money on mitzvahs, there's still going to be this outstanding need to get this done. And maybe that's what the Gemara is talking about. Yes, sir?
Is that perhaps why the Gemara brings the case of Pidyon HaBen versus Aviyah L'Regel? Kind of bringing
up
the idea that it's not kind of something that can expire?
Possibly. So I was thinking that a little bit. The problem with it is that, I think you're right, I think that the Gemara is highlighting something by bringing that up, by calling it the other regular and it's
real
bearish.
Right. So,
right. So that's also interesting. But beyond that, your point is well taken. The problem is that when the Gemara here highlights mitzvah averus, it's to prioritize the aliyah l'regel.
Why is that a problem?
Because if the point was just that, it's the point that's closer to what we were saying a minute ago, is that pidyon haben is not a mitzvah averus in the sense of creating a chumra for pidyon haben. Meaning that, okay, it's not the kind of thing where if you don't have the possibility to do it today, you're off the hook, and you have to do it next week. As opposed to a mitzvah averus, like let's say matzah, just we used that example a minute ago, so you have this mitzvah Pesach night, and if Pesach night passes, and you're not able to pass it over, and you're not able to do it, so then you're not going to do it next week.
But maybe this case is exactly doing that, that it's telling us, you might have had the avamina to think that it isn't so hard, and you could have. Meaning, once you aren't able to do it, it might be you are a pater, but no, the Gemara brings that case to say, no, it clearly isn't a mitzvah averus because it's, brought against the mitzvah averus, and that the mitzvah of the other regular is chosen as the one you do because it's averus, so clearly the other man is not.
Yeah, and I hear that, and it's an appealing point, and I think there's a lot of truth to it. The only problem is that it doesn't fit 100%, or that it just doesn't fit as smoothly, is that the purpose of the Gemara bringing up the Overa's point is to say that that's why you got to, maybe according to that opinion, that you should devote your money to the Aliyah L'Regel rather than the Pidyon HaBen. So it's to create an urgency for Aliyah L'Regel rather than to say that Pidyon HaBen is, rather than the point that we're really emphasizing here, that Pidyon HaBen is not going to be considered done, is going to hang around, and therefore maybe that's the reason why it just doesn't matter that you claim an exemption. It's still going to have to get done one way or another. So we'll talk about it that way. Another approach that you find in some Achronim, and this distinction is just a little more general, is that maybe the idea of not spending a certain amount of money on mitzvahs, that's when you need to spend the mitzvah as a preparation for the mitzvahs. You need to buy an esrog so that you have an esrog to take on the sukkahs. But if the mitzvah is to spend the money, then it could be that that's not subject to the exemption of chomesh. So since when it comes to Pidgin Aved, it's not like you have to buy something in order to get the mitzvah done. It's that, that is the process of the mitzvah. And maybe we only say there's an exemption of Chomesh when there is a certain amount of preparation that needs to be done for the mitzvah. So then we can exempt you. Which, just to finish the point for a second, it's just interesting to see how that may make sense. Because it could be we're saying, listen, a mitzvah is a mitzvah, so you have to do the mitzvah. But sometimes it's impossible to do a mitzvah. Right? So let's say if you have a mitzvah to take a esrog on Sukkot, and there simply aren't any esrogim, so then it's impossible. So then you're an onus. So then the question is, okay, but it's not really impossible, because it's only impossible now because you didn't make sure to get an esrog before Sukkot. So you have an obligation to, which logically flows, you have an obligation to get an esrog so that you'll have one on Sukkot morning when you need to take it. But how far do I have to go? It could be that getting an esrog is very, very difficult. So how far do I have to go in order to make it possible to do the mitzvah? So that's where we have limitations and we have shiurim. How far do you have to go? You have to go make sure to spend up to a fifth of your money. If it's going to cost you more than a fifth of your money, that's not a part of what you have to do to make sure the esrog is available when you need it Sukkot morning. So all of these limitations are about making sure that when the time for the mitzvah comes, you're in a position to do it. But when the mitzvah is itself spending the money, it's a whole different discussion. And then maybe this idea of Chomesh doesn't necessarily apply. Jonah?
Yeah, in terms of that reasoning, would that still work with Stucca?
So it's an interesting question to think about how Stucca fits in. What exactly is the nature of Stucca? I think it's a fascinating question. It requires exploring a lot more about how Stucca flows in. Now, it could be that Stucca by itself is defined by how much you have to give. And therefore, you know, that's itself, as far as a personal chiyuv. I think it's a fascinating area to explore. It will require us to spend more time on Stucca than we have right now. But it's interesting both in terms of figuring out the nature of Stucca, and then also the application to mitzvos, which really is not in the Gemara. It's the Ramah's application, Hilchos Lulav. The Ramah takes the Chomesh idea, which was about Stucca in the Gemara, and applies it to mitzvos. There's a lot of fascinating stuff to explore, but that'll take us a little bit far afield. But just to recap from the past few minutes, so we raised this question of why should the exemption of Chomesh not apply if you only have 5 slime total. So we saw, let's say, 4 approaches, that maybe you really have 25 and we're taking a fifth of it and that's all the Gemara is talking about, like Shua was saying. Maybe this represents a chiyuv to somebody else and maybe that should have different rules, and that's the nature of a chiyuv to another person. And that is crucial to us understanding what Pidgin Aved is about. Or maybe the idea is that it's about, and maybe the idea is that it's about, what was the third possibility we mentioned? That the fact that the pigeon is going to be last, is going to be sticking around, and that's not going to help if we say you're busted today. We still have to address the question overall. Or this fourth approach, that maybe the whole exemption is only about preparing for a mitzvah, but when we're talking about doing the mitzvah itself requires spending money, that could be a different story, and we left for a different time the question of how would that apply to tzedaka, and how does that explain the extrapolation from tzedaka to other things. Okay, so now I just want to mention for the next few minutes something that pits the question of Bris Milah and Pidgin Aved against each other, and it's a little bit of a illustration of how these different chiyuvim play out, especially both in the context of the responsibility of the parent and the responsibility towards a time-based focus. So there is a question that troubled me once upon a time, and I asked Rabbi Shafter about it. You may have heard of him if you've been on campus for the past week. So the question was as follows, that when it comes to a Bris Milah, so we know that we have a practice to do a Bris Milah early in the day. All right, case in point, I was at a Bris Milah this morning, just so I can say that as part of the illustration. So I had to go to an earlier than usual minyan in order to do that. Because the practice usually is to have a Bris early in the day because of it's reason makdim b'le mitzvos. We try to have the bris at the earliest possible time. Now, when it comes to a pigeon of death, you don't find such a concern. And that pigeon habens are often held in the afternoon. So why is it different? Why is it that pigeon habens are not so makbid to do them early in the day? And a bris, we are makbid to have it usually earlier in the day. Now there are a couple of approaches to this, and some of it has to do perhaps with how exactly the timing is cheshbon for a pigeon habed, and perhaps other considerations. But I'm just going to focus here on one specific angle. So when I asked this question to Rav Schechter, so he responded that we're concerned that no one's going to come to our pigeon habed if we have it too early in the morning, and because there was also a hiddur of Barov Am Hadras Melech, that we want mitzvos to be done in somewhat sizable crowds. So that tells us that we should allow for that to happen by having it a little bit later. So that question, just that answer, just opened up other questions. Because if the issue is Barov Am Hadras Melech, so why don't we have that concern by a bris milah too? So if we're saying that basically we have a tension between two hidurim. On the one hand, we have Zerizim Makdim of the mitzvahs. So that pushes us to do a mitzvah as early as possible. On the other hand, we have Barov Am Hadras Melech. So that pushes us to try to schedule something when people can come, or people are likely to come. And there's a tension between the two. So why do we decide that when it comes to a bris milah, the Zerizin wins, and when it comes to pigeon aben, Barov Am wins? Especially when you consider that pigeon abens are, by definition, much rarer than bris milahs, because every baby that has a pigeon aben is also Chayiv Mila, but very much not the other way around. Right? Most babies who have a bris mila are not Chayiv Pidgin Abens. So, Pidgin Aben by definition is much rarer. So you think that if you are worried to not get a crowd for a Pidgin Aben, how come you're able to get a crowd for a bris mila? What exactly is the logic here that says when it comes to bris mila, Zerizin wins? And when it comes to Pidgin Aben, Barov Am wins. Now, before taking the question further, I should just mention it's not absolute. That when it comes to bris milah, the truth is we do acknowledge Barov Am a little bit, because if we were really exclusively worried about its reason, so we would always have every bris at the Vasikah Minyan, you know, every bris at the earliest possible time. So we do concede a little bit trying to get a crowd. So it's not completely thrown out the window, the idea of Barov Am, but we don't go that far. We only allow it to be the later early minyan, but not necessarily the absolute first minyan. So it's still basically true that Zerizin takes priority with bris, and Barov Am takes priority with the pigeon aben, as far as minyan Yisrael seems to play out. And I should emphasize in this question that while there could be other approaches here, should just know, at least to validate the question, that the Stechemet does have a whole rant about this. The Stechemet is very upset about why it is that people do pigeon abens in the afternoon. Why aren't they more machmir and more makbid to do the pigeon aben earlier in the day? So you hear the question? So I thought you could say an approach as follows. Two-step approach. One-step approach is, how do you address the general question of a clash in Hidurim? Let's say a clash between Zerizin and other Hidurim, which comes up in a lot of contexts. It can come up in any mitzvah. You have an opportunity to take a esrog right now, which is available, or if you wait an hour, there'll be a more mahudr esrog that's going to be available. What should you do? Or, for example, you know, we tend to do Kiddush Levana on Motzei Shabbos. It's So why do we do Kiddush Levana Motzei Shabbos? What does it have to do with Motzei Shabbos? Who knows, right? Nothing. So really, we wait because we want people to be dressed up for Kiddush Levana. But being that Kiddush Levana is the 32nd thing, so how likely is it that people are going to dress up specially for this 32nd process? So we take advantage of Motzei Shabbos when people are coming out of shul, when they are in their finery, and the assumption is that people will therefore be mahader Kiddush Levana more than they would if it was a random Tuesday night. So if that's the case, so there you have an example of we could have done Kiddush Levana earlier, but we delay it because we want it to be done at a time that's more mahader. So this is a discussion that you find in a lot of areas of halacha. What do you do? A clash between Zrizin and other Hidurim. So it's a machlokes achronim, the truth is. You find many different discussions in different svarim as to what should take priority, and there are many different positions taken. I think that there is a svar at the heart of the whole discussion that goes to the question of what is Zrizin meant to accomplish. That Zrizin could be understood in at least two ways. On the one hand, you could say that Zrizin is itself a hiddur. That you want to show that you are eager to do a mitzvah, you want to show that you're enthusiastic about it, so therefore you go to the mitzvah as quickly as you can. That's one understanding of Zrizin. Alternatively, you could say it's not really a hiddur, but it's part of a concern that we're afraid that if we let this minute pass, maybe the mitzvah will disappear. So you have to catch it while it's here, and if you delay, then it could get lost. So if that's the layout, so then how does that affect the question of Zrizin versus other Hidurim? So I think the way it affects things is that if Zrizin is a Hidur, you're trying to show your enthusiasm, so then it really makes sense to only do that once all the other Hidurim are in place also. Why should you sacrifice doing a mitzvah the best possible way just to do it quickly? So it's just sacrificing one type of enthusiasm for the other. It makes sense to say, wait till you have the perfect circumstances, and then, within those circumstances, do it as quickly as possible. But if the concern is that we're afraid the mitzvah may get lost, then there's a svara to say that that should be the dominant concern, and even if circumstances will be more perfect later, still, better you should do it now when you know you can do it, rather than wait for things to be perfect. And I once gave a drasha about this point. There's also like a hashkafa here, that we're worried that you'll never get to things if you keep waiting for perfect circumstances. So we say, even though there's always a possibility that there'll be more idealized contexts, still better to take care of things in front of you now and not to worry about that. Okay, so it comes out that if this reason is for purposes of hiddur, you might as well wait and bring in the other hiddur together with it. But if the reason is because we're afraid to lose the mitzvah, then that should be the dominant concern, and it would take priority over other hiddur. So far, so good? Okay, that's step one. Step two. You recall last week we talked about the Dvar of Ram and the like, the setting of somebody who has two bris milas to do, one's bismana, one's not bismana, what should you do first? And the Dvar of Rav said you should do the not bismana first, and everyone yelled at him, and it was a big machlokas, right? Remember that? So let's tweak that question now. And this happens to be a discussion in the tshuva of our friend Rav Nassim Gishtetner, Zichron Lebracha, and the tshuva is Laharis Nassim, where he considers the scenario. Let's say you have two mitzvahs, somehow both your responsibility. One is to do a bris milah, And the other is to do a pigeon a ben. Which again is another strange situation because they can't both be the same boys. We'll see, details don't make sense. And therefore they can't both be your sons. It's a complicated question how exactly you have both the Uvim, but some strange situation you have both in front of you. So which should you do first? The Bris Milah or the pigeon of Ben? What would you say?
Don't do the meal for your son. I mean, there's a
few of Kari's there, so you say the Kari is reason to prioritize. Okay, that's one Svara. What else? So he says to prioritize the Bris Milah for a different reason. He says that you should prioritize the Bris Milah because the Ikar Mitzvah is the eighth day. And if, because you're so involved in the pigeon of Ben, it gets late, and then it gets dark, and the eighth day is over, that's it, that mitzvah is gone. You'll never get it back. But when it comes to the pigeon of Ben, the pigeon of Ben is not phrased as a mitzvah of a certain day. But the language of the Torah is Mi ben chodesh tipodeh. That from the age of 1 month, that's when the chiyuv pigeon haben starts. But there's no specific zman of the mitzvah onto one day. It's just the earliest day that you can do it. So that itself is an example of reason like Dina the mitzvos that we do the mitzvah on the first day of its chiyuv, which is a lifelong chiyuv. But there's nothing otherwise magical about that day as opposed to every other day. Follow? So therefore, were it to happen that you were to get delayed with the pigeon of Ben, and you wouldn't get to it till tomorrow, so that would not be a fundamental loss in the mitzvah. It would be delaying it, which is somewhat of a loss, but it wouldn't be fundamentally flawed, and therefore it's less vulnerable than Bris Milah is. So if one accepts that distinction, so then you could say as follows, that how do you weigh up these reason versus Barov Am clash in the two mitzvahs respectively? When it comes to Pidgin Aben, so this reason versus Barov Am, this reason is mostly a hither. Because we're not so worried about the mitzvah getting lost, because the mitzvah today, tomorrow, and next week is all the same mitzvah. So this reason is basically there for the purposes of a hither, of showing enthusiasm. So maybe it's better to wait until everything's perfect and show enthusiasm then. But when it comes to a Bris Milah, we're more worried about the idea of the mitzvah getting lost, because if the eighth day ends and you haven't done it yet, that component of the mitzvah is fundamentally gone. And therefore, its reason is not just about a hinder, it's also about making sure the mitzvah doesn't get lost. And we said before that if we're worried about the mitzvah getting lost, then it makes sense to prioritize reason over other hidurim. So perhaps that explains why the minhag Klal Yisrael is that when it comes to a Bris Milah, to be more machmir on this reason in, and when it comes to a pigeon aben, to be less concerned about that, and therefore open to being more machmir on the Barov Am end. What do you think? Does that make sense? Yes? All right. So I'll throw in another story here also while we're at it that also just builds on some of these foundations in a different way. That even Zrizin as a hider plays out different. This is more of a Zrizin point, but just it's while we're here in this discussion. That Zrizin, even if you look at Zrizin as a hider, if this distinction is true, it comes out that it affects Bris Milah in a different way than Pidgin Aben. And this is based on a different idea. That there is a discussion, for example, normally the Shlus Yaakov has a tshuva. It's quoted in the Pistrei Tshuva with the following chiddush. Shlus Yaakov discusses that normally the practice is, we know that a bris on the eighth day can happen any day of the year. And so normally, if it's a day when, let's say, Shabbos, so you have not just Shacharis but Musaf, so on a normal weekday, so you have Shacharis, and then the bris is after Shacharis. If it's a day when there's Musaf, or longer davening, then you do it after Musaf. Except on Rosh Hashanah, there's a bris on Rosh Hashanah, the practice is to do the bris by Tekiyah Shofar. So the question is why? Why don't we say like every other day of the year, let's do our whole Shacharis and Musaf and everything, and then at the end of davening, we'll do the bris then. Why do we have it early? So the Shlus Yaakov has a chiddush that maybe there's a cutoff point for his reason. That maybe his reason has to be before Chatzos. And that on your normal day of davening, even if it's Shabbos or Yom Tov, presumably you're finished before Chatzos. But on Rosh Hashanah, davening drags on longer, and you're not going to be finished before Chatzos, generally. So then, in order to get the bris before Chatzos, you have it earlier in the davening process. So where do you get this idea that Chatzos is the cutoff for his reason? Why should that be the case? Why don't we just say that his reason means as early as you can, and whatever that means? Where does this idea come from that after Chatzos, reason turns into a pumpkin? That its reason all of a sudden has this limit? Any thoughts what that distinction could be based on? So, I think you could say the following. That this also goes to our previous chakira. That about its reason specifically. That if you say that its reason is just about make sure the mitzvah doesn't get lost, so nachanami, so get to it as early as you can, whatever that means, before Chatzos, after Chatzos, when you're dealing with before Chatzos, there's still room to do it earlier. When you're dealing with after Chatzos, there's also still room to do it earlier. Chatzos is irrelevant. But if you're talking about its reason as a hitter, then maybe Chatzos is important. Because if the idea is you're trying to show enthusiasm and you're trying to show prioritization, so then you could say, well, there is a certain objective way of showing that. That if you divide the day into two halves, then whatever is done in the first half of the day, so that's before the second half of the day. So it's kind of an objective prioritization that when there's only two parts, so anything in the first part is some level of prioritization, and anything in the second part is some level of not being prioritized. Does that make sense? So therefore, Chatzos becomes a cutoff point where anything that happened before that, we could say, may not be the absolute biggest rush, but at least has some kind of objective prioritization by being in the first half of the day. And anything after that may not be the biggest delay, but has some kind of objective way of not being prioritized. So maybe there is this inherent idea within the reason that it has to be early rather than late. It has to be the first half rather than the second half. So that could also then distinguish between bris meal and pidgin aben in terms of how we're understanding the zmanim. Like we said before, that pidgin aben, if the zman starts now but goes a whole life, so you could say, listen, if I get the pidgin aben any time within the first year, it's really still the reason, because it could be done 10 years later. Not that we recommend that, but maybe that would still be considered some type of relative reason. While it comes to the bris, if the mitzvah is specifically the eighth day, really, so then, the only way to get some kind of objective zrizus is to put it earlier in the day. So in other words, that gives us two svaras, while why pidgin haben is treated differently than Bris Mila. Both of them are based on this distinction that the Zman is defined differently. That Bris Mila, the Zman is defined as that day, really, and everything else is Shalom Bizmana. And Pidgin Abed, the Zman only begins that time and goes on for a lifetime. So that distinction gives us two different ways to explain why Bris Mila is treated differently. Either Bris Mila, the reason is about losing the mitzvah, and that's a bigger threat for Mila than it is for Pidgin Abed, because you only have that day. Or it's not about that, it's about prioritization and about the hiddur. But even there, it plays out differently, because the prioritization is relative, and if it's only one day, then the scale is contracted, and it has to be much earlier in the day, while if it's the first day of the rest of his life, so then you would have a much broader time frame in which it could still be considered early, in which it could still be considered prioritized. Okay? So basically, I think we have to figure out some other things about the nature of the Pidgin Aben, which will draw a lot of the Marmokomos that maybe haven't seen yet. So maybe we will pick up with a lot of that tomorrow. We want to first start addressing the question. You'll see some of these Makoros, some of them you've seen already, highlight the question of what exactly is the division of labor or the division of mitzvah components within Pidgin Aben, where the question of the role of the Kohen, how exactly does he fit in? So, for example, I think first up on the Mar Makomos list after this Gemara was the Gemara in Pesachim, where the Gemara in Pesachim raises the question of who should make the Shechionu on the Pidgin Aben, and the fact that the Kohen is even a candidate for the Pidgin Aben Bracha, for Pidgin Aben Shechionu at least, that's something that's very interesting, and that's something that we'll have to explore tomorrow. And you saw the Rush, you see the Rush here in Kedushin, where the Rush discusses the possibility that there's another Bracha that the Kohen makes, as Rafinah talks about also. So all of that is very interesting, and it raises questions of whose mitzvah is it anyway? What exactly is going on? Why is the Kohen making a Bracha here? Is there a chiyuv on the Kohen? So all of that we'll start exploring tomorrow. So just to quickly recap, so we spoke about our Gemara. We looked at how the Gemara brings various dinim, and we suggested that the dinim here are not just a random sampling of Pidgin Aben dinim, but specifically dinim that help to illustrate and flesh out the question of the interaction of different people with the chiyuv here. Is the chiyuv on the child? Is the chiyuv on the parent? Is the chiyuv on both? Why is the one rather than the other, etc., etc.? The fact that the Gemara specifically in this mitzvah, more so in the context than in the context of Milo or other things, focuses on only having to do it if someone else has to do it for you, etc., etc., which is itself interesting. And we noted the difference between Mila and Pidgin Aben, in that Mila is about being a male, and the idea the father is obligated doesn't necessarily have anything to do specifically with the nature of the relationship, while when it comes to Pidgin Aben, a person is only subject to Pidgin Aben because of the relationship between him and his parents, i.e. the fact that he is their first child. So that takes on a whole different dimension, and that's perhaps why also our Gemara here addresses the question of a man who has five wives and five firstborns, and how exactly should that affect the nature of the mitzvah. And then we talked about the fact that the Gemara says that if you only have five shloim, that we have a question who to do first, if the father and the son both need a pidgin. And we discussed how that also highlights the relationship, and we talked about how does that not fit the din of Hamavazve Zeosu Mechomesh, you're not supposed to spend more than a fifth of your money on mitzvahs, and we discussed various approaches, maybe the Gemara is talking about where we're down to a fifth, or maybe the question is because there's a chiyuv to someone else, and therefore it's like if you borrow money, or because the mitzvah needs to get done one way or another, so it doesn't matter who pati you today, it's still going to be here. Jacob raised the issue of how that connects to the Gemara's invoking mitzvah of Eres, and also the possibility that Chomesh is only if we're talking about preparing for the mitzvah, not if the mitzvah itself is the giving of the money. And then we contrasted Pitchin Abedin Bris Mila in terms of the Chiyuv, and the Zman of the Chiyuv, that when it comes to Bris, there's an idea of the eighth day. When it comes to Pitchin Abedin, the mitzvah really starts after a Chodesh, but doesn't necessarily focus on that day specifically. And we tried to use that two different ways to explain the Minig Yisrael, to be more worried about doing a Bris quickly than a Pitchin Abedin quickly. Either because the mitzvah is more likely to get lost for a bris than for a pidgin aben, if you believe that this reason is about that, or because even if you believe that this reason is about just simple hiddur and prioritizing, but that's all relative to the time frame. So with a bris, if it's one day, then that pushes it into the earlier part of the day, while a pidgin aben is a much longer time frame, and that wouldn't necessarily have the same math. Let me set the question of where the kohen fits in here, that's what we'll pick up with tomorrow. Jonah?
Just a quick thing for me. Looking at the pasuk and the mefarshim, really the fact that the pasuk by Avram says "Esmei Rosh," does that indicate, and the mefarshim's comments on that, the fact that there was certain tzrizus in Avram's during the mitzvah of "Esmei Rosh"? He could have waited, but Hashem commanded him on that day, and he went right after the mila. Does that indicate that there's a special hiddur by mila specifically that needs to be tzrizus in the fact that it needs to be done as soon as possible, as opposed to any other mitzvah?
So it's an interesting question, because what indicates a little bit not that way is that, you know, here we have Avram taking up the Bris Mila, and then we learn Zrizus from Avram, but not from there, from the next week's parashah from Vayera, that by the Akedah. So it's always interesting that we have the Bris Mila by Avram, and then Zrizus, and they're not connected. You know, that the Zrizus is somewhere. There is some discussion with Farshim. I think the Netziv has a comment over there, if you look on that pasuk by the Bris Mila. But in terms of Chazal, it's interesting that Avram's Zrizus is invoked more in the context of the Akedah rather than the Mila. I'm not totally sure what to make of that, but it's interesting that that's the focus of Chazal. Again, if you look, the Farshim might be different, and maybe look at the Netziv specifically. But it's an interesting point. All right, Jed, you look like you want to dive for us.
Sure.
Okay, you can tell from your expression. Ashrei Shavu Yisachar, Jalufa Salah.